Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, greetings, greetings, fellow actors. It is I, the host from the coast, the sage of the stage, a man with more soul than he can control, and whose every move turns to gold, William Powell, a.k.a. the King of DC Media. Welcome to this marvelous edition of Inside Acting. Let me remind you that you can connect with me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/William.T.Powell at Twitter. And if you go to twitter.com, I am at Will_Powell, and it is a capital W and capital P. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, that's my handle. And tonight I have a special guest on the show, none other than my brother from the same mother, Martin Keith Powell, who was a contestant on Jeopardy last fall. Martin Keith Powell will also serve as my co-host tonight as I bring on director Mark Anthony Del Negro, director of the upcoming horror film The Undead. So let me bring in the king of Jeopardy, the biomedical engineer extraordinaire, my brother, Martin Keith Powell. Hey, Keith.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
That's good. That's good. Thanks for coming on the show. Okay.
You're welcome.
So tell me a little bit about how you got to be on Jeopardy, man.
Okay, well, it all starts with an online test. And that's usually given once a year, normally January.
Okay.
So, and they take it by time zone. So I took the Eastern time zone test. And basically you have to wait until they contact you for an audition before you can audition. So about maybe 6 weeks later, I got an email that actually, I think I almost deleted it, and it says you've been picked to, or been selected to go to the audition in Philadelphia. So I confirmed everything and showed up at the audition.
Okay.
And the audition was in February, So at the audition, you fill out a lot of paperwork. You take the headshots, and you you actually play a practice Jeopardy game in front of the contestant coordinators. So that was really fun.
Okay. Okay. So it sounded like a very rigorous audition.
Yeah. I mean, they're looking for personality. And you have to take the test over again, a 50-question test. So test score, personality, and those are like the two major factors.
Wow. Are you at liberty to say what your test score was?
They don't know. I don't know.
well,
I guess it's good enough to be in the show.
Good enough to be in the show. That's what I was going to say. You got in. You got in. So then how did you know get the call that you actually going to go out to L.A. and be on the show?
Well, it was in June. I think at the audition, they told us it would be like – anytime within the next year, they'll call us.
Okay.
But I got the call in June, and they're starting season 29 at the end of July. That's when they started taping. So I was selected to be on the second week of taping.
Wow.
Of season 29.
Huh.
And they tape five shows a day, 2 days a week.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so
normally.
Was that email or phone call, or what happened?
First it was a voicemail because I didn't answer the phone. So I called the guy back and it was a real phone. Hey, it's a real guy. I thought it was a prank or something. I don't know. So I said, he said, August, that first week of August, are you available? I said, yes. I'm like, He said, can you take off of work? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, so I called him back next day, and I said, yeah, that's a good time, and I already requested time off or whatever, and I could be there.
Okay.
So.
That's amazing. So now when you get out there, so describe to me what was really tough about being on the show?
Well, tough. I guess probably the toughest part is that you're in the room. Well, when you walk in the morning, you're with 12 people who are just as smart as you and who studied as much as you have. So when you're practicing there, you realize it's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy because at home you play against yourself. I mean, you're not playing against the best people. So that's the toughest part for me.
Huh. What did you find easy about it?
Probably the whole show itself, from a production standpoint, it really flowed well. I mean, they tape 5 shows a day, and they were really, really on schedule. So I thought that was probably the easiest part.
Okay.
And the whole experience.
Yeah. And so, how many commercial breaks did they have? Was there a lot of commercial breaks and all that?
They actually edited to tape, which means they paused for the commercial break, and they just put a minute and a half of blank space.
Okay.
In between the tape. So in that minute and a half, you know, Alex comes out and answers questions from the audience, or the makeup people will, touch you up or something.
Right.
So, I mean, there's the standard breaks you see on TV.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it's basically a 30-minute show. 30 minutes of taping. So.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. And I guess with commercials, is 22 minutes of content. So how big was the set?
I would say, it was surprisingly not that big. It looks bigger on TV, but I would say it's probably twice the size as the NBC studios here. It's academic, that studio, maybe twice the size of that.
Uh-huh.
And yeah.
Oh, okay. So when are we going to see you on there again?
I can't be on the show again as long as Alex hosts. So,
is that right?
Right. Well, I can be on when they change hosts. I can actually be on again. So,
I did not know that. I guess it's part of the contract.
Yeah. Not unless they. I mean, I didn't win 3 times, so I didn't qualify for the Tournament of Champions. So.
Oh, okay.
There's other game shows you can be on, so.
Oh, okay. So any advice for those who want to be on Jeopardy?
Well, I would say, given that 150,000 people take the online test and they only choose 400 people per season. I would give advice, just keep trying, because, the first time I auditioned was back in 1996 at Resorts International in Atlantic City.
Wow.
It was a 10-question quiz back then. And the first time I took the test, I was disappointed because it was harder than I thought it was. The online test is really hard. So I just would give advice, just keep trying and watch the show every day, keep a journal, which I did, and all the questions you don't know, look it up and think about why is that the answer? You know, just try to think, how do you get to this answer from this question? So
yeah, because you have the biomedical engineering background, and I noticed that, you know, some people, if they're better in the arts, maybe they do better in those classes. Those questions, and then they're not as good on the the engineering questions or the science, and vice versa.
Well, but you can't leave any money on the board, so you have to be competitive. So, I don't know anything about opera, so I studied a lot about opera, and just so happens I got an opera category. So I didn't leave anything on the table that I knew on that category. Right. So,
gotcha.
I mean, you have, whatever your weakness is, you have to, you know, study that.
Right,
I would
exactly.
say.
Absolutely.
Like,
now,
Shakespeare is very difficult.
When we were sitting
yeah.
up watching it at home last September, I think there was one gal, she had there's some sort of, it was something to do, Beatrix Potter, what was that question? It was like the most obscure literary question I've ever seen in my life. And I'm an English major, and I could, that thing went over my head. That was like, wow. I can't remember the
yeah,
question when you were on there.
Yeah, I don't remember that answer, but
yeah.
Yeah, she was pretty good.
Wow.
The literary category.
Yeah, unfortunately, sometimes you just run into a faster gun. Oh, well. All
or
right.
You,
so go ahead.
Or you get the wrong category.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's,
okay.
I mean, anybody can win the game, like they tell us. So.
Right, that's right. Okay, Keith, I want you to hang on, and I want you to help me interview this guy I'm going to bring on here. He's an Army veteran. He's a golfer. He's a screenwriter. He's a politician. And he's even a filmmaker. Let's bring on my man, Mark Anthony Del Negro. Hey, Mark, what's up, brother?
How are you, William? Can you hear me?
Good. Yeah, I can hear you good. Can you hear me?
All right. I can hear you fine. And, Keith, congratulations about being on Jeopardy. That's a major accomplishment.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
All right,
thank you.
Mark. So let's talk a little bit about the undead, man. What's it all about?
Well, I'd say it's definitely it's a zombie genre, but it's a different genre pretty much to where the normal, your typical zombie movie. Basically, the pitch would be Outbreak meets Night of the Living Dead. Basically, it's what would happen in a post-nuclear, say, Holocaust, post-nuclear accident, say, like a Chernobyl-type incident. Whereas people are contaminated through nuclear radiance flying through the air, and the people who are not affected by the chemical radiance need to protect themselves not only from those floating radiance, but also from the infected people. So those people are actually the zombies. Basically, the synopsis of the story is you have two city slickers, so to say, a gentleman by the name of Matthew Jones and his girlfriend Susan Gamble, who will be played by Susie Lorraine, and they're venturing out to the actual power plant that exploded. And they're pretty much unfamiliar with the town. They're unfamiliar with the people. And lo and behold, they realize that there is something up, and they take shelter in a woman's home who has a questionable past, and they go from there. They basically need to survive, and there's other incidents throughout the course of the movie to where there are people going into this town, and they're encountering the people who were in the accident at the time of the explosion. They basically learn that they need to protect themselves. And
so
I pretty much got – and I also got this idea from – you mentioned in my – what was I going to say? In my introduction how I was how I'm an Army veteran. This is basically what really happens during chemical warfare. Basically – if you don't have on your gas map or your mop gear, basically it's called the military protective posture, military-oriented protective posture, your skin will blister, you will bleed from your eyes, you will bleed from your nose, etc. So basically covering, if you see on the images on the Facebook account with the character concepts, etc., basically the characters are covered in sheets. Basically, that had happened in Japan after the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The Japanese knew that the survivors of those two places had the most clothing on. So they were actually, the Japanese were actually training soldiers in sheets to protect them from chemical radiance of the atomic bomb before they decided to surrender. So that's where I got that idea from.
Wow. That's really mind-blowing. So now where are you going to film the film?
This film is going to be shot on location in Massachusetts. It's an L.A.-based project, but as you know, lots of people are shooting in Massachusetts right now because of the tax incentives. So we're doing that, and we also want to capture the New England fall foliage. I think that some of the there's no better place to in the world than New England in the fall, like mid-October, early November. Some of the, especially in the Quabbin Reservoir, how the leaves basically reflect off the reservoir and the sun sets is just, there's going to be some really, really magnificent cinematography for this film. And then you'll have zombies running around, so you got to throw them in there.
Now you know there's going to be an inevitable comparison between this project and The Walking Dead. Everything's compared against The Walking Dead. Now, how would you say it differs?
I would say it differs because I believe they're in Georgia, and we are going to be in New England for ours. So, and I'd say the characters. I'm very in terms of The Walking Dead. I'm probably at maybe like still on season one. I really wasn't that much of a zombie fan. I just kind of came into this one. You know, a few months ago when I wrote it and people liked the script because I did my research on the chemical warfare, et cetera, and I kind of knew about the Night of the Living Dead. So in terms of The Walking Dead and the undead, I would say the characters are mainly going to be from the New Jersey and New England area, and we're also going to have a British woman who is going to be an Oxfordian graduate who is actually an EPA engineer who was actually who's kind of the heroine of the story, who knew that there was stuff going on at the plant, et cetera, and she's kind of the voice of reason. So not only is it, say, a zombie Holocaust movie, but it's kind of you kind of have a subliminal message to it saying if we're not careful with our one planet, we may use it. So it's kind of that type of message to where as the contaminants, we're contaminating each other, we're contaminating our environment. So it's kind of like that. It's kind of a movie that's going to entertain you, but on the same note, you're going to learn something.
Okay. So, Keith, do you have any questions?
Let me see. Have you seen The Dawn of the Dead by George Romero? Have you seen that one?
I have seen that. I've seen, in terms of zombie movies, I've seen The Night of the Living Dead. I've seen maybe one season of The Walking Dead. I saw The Evil Dead recently. And I saw a couple of other ones. I saw a couple of other titles there was one with Robert Englund. I can't remember the name of it exactly. And then there was another one that was kind of a parody of Snakes on the Plains. It was Flight of the Zombies or something like that. And that was like D movie stuff. That was like something I watched at like 2 o'clock in the morning one night when I was living in central Pennsylvania, bored out of my mind. It just happened to be on demand. So I did see Dawn of the Dead, and I think that you're probably going to ask me if I'm a George Romero fan. The answer to that is yes. And if there were to be a genre that we would look up to in terms of what, you know, the type of look, the flashback look, it would be what George Romero is doing. When we were in the early stages of the development of this, we were saying this is going to be a throwback. We basically pretty much want this to kind of emulate the Night of the Living Dead feel, but on the same token, you still need those modern zombies that you see on The Walking Dead. So therefore, some people will be the profusely rotten zombies, like say, like maybe a week into the rot, you know, the decomposing of the bodies, and then some will be simple, to where, as you see on the Facebook page, to where they're in the early stages of their contamination, to where they're just blistering and they're bleeding from their orifices, their eyes, their nose, their mouth, etc.
So yeah. Now, Mark, talk a little bit about how you're raising money for the film.
Well, right now we do have an initial budget and we do have funds secured. However, we, in terms of being a good businessman, and this is where I see where some of the independent filmmakers can go wrong. Normally, you have a creative running it, and they're not business-like people. So once they get to where we already are, they basically say, okay, this is what we have, and this is what we're going to do with it. They run into trouble. With my background, my MBA, et cetera, I pretty much want an active ledger. And with an active ledger, you need accounts receivable and accounts payable. So we already have our accounts payable basically listed. With the accounts receivable, we want to pretty much have an excess balance, because that's another thing with a good business ledger. You have an excess balance. So we're going to basically be doing pre-sales DVDs and also downloadable, the digital downloads on Indiegogo, where we also have a comic book that's being developed by an artist in the UK. It's actually going to be a prequel to How the Plan Exploded, that comic book. There'll be other merchandise. Some of the actresses have volunteered to sell autograph photographs, etc. So we're basically building a cash flow in pre-production to basically build up the hype more and more and more. As you see, in just a little over a month, we've garnered, I believe it's 1,030 likes on Facebook. We want to build that more and build more of a following, because then once the DVD actually comes out and once it hits theaters, people will already be excited to see it, and we won't have to basically trying to get people out of the house or trying to buy them to buy the DVD once it comes out. We want them to be excited while we're filming it. And also, there's also a small portion for individual investors to get involved, and it's not something that would break the bank. However, we're not going to take any unsolicited people. If there's somebody that we know through one of the, through our networks, if they have worked with Crash Films before, if they had worked with Brandy, or how they had worked with one of our other friends in these kind of our, the Maryland, D.C., Boston, L.A., and also we're collaborating with guys in the U.K. If it's in that network, there will be opportunities to raise the additional capital. So there is still a private fundraising going on with people within the networks. And then there is also going to be that Indiegogo I was telling you about, where we are going to, where we're not necessarily going to sell shares, say, in the film or, say, an associate producer, anything like that, just mainly merchandise to get people happy. And everything that's going to be on those pre-online sales, 10% of that money is going to be donated to the One Fund Boston to help the victims from the Boston Marathon bombings, because I went to college in Boston. I live about an hour outside of the city, and I figure since we're raising all this money, et cetera, I can do something from the town that I've come to love through all these years.
Yeah, that's great, man. I'm really glad to hear that. That's very impressive. Yeah, so many filmmakers don't have a plan, but you definitely have the plan, and that's great. So let's move on and talk about Widow's Creek. What's going on with that?
I knew you were going to say so. Well, your boy Mike Marino, that's Mike Marino's brainchild.
Yep, I know.
I'm kind of on the short leash with that because I'm only an associate producer, but I have some good stories on how I actually became an associate producer.
Okay.
So I can tell you that. And in terms of the financing and stuff like that, Charlie Young will, as you know, Charlie Young's a a federal dog. I don't want him sending, anyone. I don't want him sending a sniper up here in Massachusetts to come and get me after I, say any, top secret stuff. Because Charlie's a good guy. I love that guy to death. I was just with him in Maryland. So Mike was one of the first people I met in the film industry, Mike Marino, the director of Widow Creek.
Right.
And me, him, and Charlie were originally talking about a project that I wrote titled The Air, which is about a slasher, kind of a Norman Bates type slasher, son of a senator, but son of a senator who happens to be a serial killer, go figure. So Mike and Charlie decided to go another way with this Widow Creek idea that they came up with. So, and that's when I, started to venture into the undead. So with Widow Creek, Mike and I were still talking. We were still exchanging notes. And it's funny because a guy by the name of Chris Tebow, I think he's listening right now, he actually owns Tebow Films in West Springfield, Massachusetts. Another guy named Mike Aloisi, who I know, who is actually a high school football teammate of mine, were with Kane Hodder in Germany. They were touring Germany. As you know, Kane does all these festivals and stuff because he's a big name in the horror genre. And I just happened to see that on Facebook. I was like, oh, okay, cool, you know, good for them. You know, they're doing good. And I just happened to talk to Mike one night, and Mike, I know Mike very well. Mike felt kind of bummed, and I was like, what's wrong, Mike? He's like, well, you know, this Widow Creek project, I'm trying to get Kane Hodder's attention, but, you know, his agent's not calling me back, this and that. It's kind of a stalemate right now. And so I said, Kane Hodder? And he says, yes. I was like, that's kind of crazy because one of my high school teammates who I still talk to every now and then on Facebook is actually with him right now in Germany. Would you like me to contact him and see if he could contact Kane to get in contact with you? And Mike immediately said, yeah, that's an excellent idea. If you can do that, Mark, go for it. So within about 20 minutes of me sending the email to Mike Aloisi, who actually wrote a book with Kane, and he's currently writing a book with Tom Savini, who's also a legend in the horror genre.
Oh,
he got
So
Mike Aloisi, he's known as author Mike. He's actually pretty big in the horror genre as well. This is a guy I've known since I was 13 years old.
Uh-huh.
So within 20 minutes, you know, like I said, we played high school, you know, Pop Warner high school football together. I mean, I've known him since I was 13. We were in Mr.
Right.
Grew's science class in seventh grade, for crying out loud. So in like 20, so, you know, in times like that, you know, that's one of the people he's going to respond to. So 20 minutes, he's like, what's up, buddy? And I said to him, I said, a friend of mine's a filmmaker. He wants to talk to your friend Kane about starring in his film. So he said, okay, I'll forward the information. And within about a week, Mike Marino was very happy, and he said, Mark, thank you. You know, he pretty much thanked me for, you know, reaching out, and he said this was Kane's message, and he basically showed me a copy of Kane's message to him, and I said, Mike, let's make this movie. And I was like, wow, that's pretty big. Wow, the power of Facebook. And then lo and behold, when the IMDb page came out, I saw that I was an associate producer, and I was like, okay, well, all right, well, I guess so. I wasn't going to argue with them. So, I mean, that's a pretty cool film. I'm happy that film's coming out. To basically throw a nice little, I'd say, pitch in there, as Mike likes to say, it's Friday the 13th meets Last of the Mohegans, and you know Kane as Jason Voorhees. You know him as James Crowley, but you'll remember him as Richard Williams. And he's basically referring to the characters. You know, Jason Voorhees, Friday the 13th, as Kane played him. James Crowley, or I think it's Richard Crowley. I can't remember. It's something Crowley in the Hatchet films. But then it's Richard Williams and the Widow Creek, which is going to also be a franchise. And that I really think that that's going to be a very fun film to make, and I'm looking forward to that. I believe the slate to shoot is actually a month before The Undead. I believe Widow Creek is going to be shooting in September in North Carolina, whereas The Undead is going to be shooting in Massachusetts in October.
Right.
And Widow Creek was originally supposed to shoot in the summertime. However, all those cicadas came up, those little tiny bugs, and Mike didn't want to film in that because he was afraid it would destroy the camera, and, you know, who the heck knows what those little buggers can do. So it'd probably be annoying. It'd probably really mess up the sound guys, some footage. So he'd probably shoot this movie, and then he'd have to basically block out a million cicadas. So.
Oh, man. So, Keith, did you have another question?
I'm looking on your Facebook page for The Undead, and I was wondering, who did the artwork for some of these zombies?
In terms of the actual people or the drawings?
Yeah.
The actual people and the drawings?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll, I'll answer both. Basically, the cover photo is actually stills from our promo video. Our promo video was shot on April the 5th in Los Angeles, right outside Los Angeles, and that's in post right now. We should be releasing that soon. Right now, they're actually making an original score for it. Originally, we were not going to make an original score, but then the higher-ups in L.A. who have kind of some say over me, they say they want an original score because they really like it. They want to add some more music. So it was originally supposed to be May the 10th, but in order to get this original score right, it's probably going to be another week or two. So I'm happy it's going to be done right, and that promo should, you know, get us a lot of views and more likes. So those are the stills. The guy with the bloody sheet, the people posing in the background with the cell phone camera pictures of behind the scenes. Those are to give some of those people recognition. That was Mark Drotter, Sam Emerson, Brandon Densley, and it was shot by Daniel Tripod, who's with Crash Films. In terms of, say, the character concepts like the zombie bear, some of the zombies, that was actually drawn by our director, Dan Brownlie, of Brand B Corporation in the United Kingdom. And he's an artist by trade, and he's a director, a very artistic individual. He's going to be doing the storyboards. And he's also very good friends with Jason Moore, the individual who's actually going to be making the Undead comic book. So it's a very multi-talented individual, and I'm happy that they're on our team.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a very impressive team there. I mean, it's amazing how you've been able to bring all that talent together.
And that was another thing when I was actually putting it together. When I was putting this team together, as you know, Massachusetts right now is basically the epicenter for filming. We have a Robert Downey Jr. movie going on, Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper movies going on. Then I just learned today that Johnny Depp's not going to be coming to Boston and play Whitey Bulger, but they're probably going to hire someone else. So we have all these A-list movies going on here because of the tax incentives. So I pretty much knew that this was the place to draw people. And I knew that, say, in my first feature, I wasn't going to draw a big name. But what I noticed with all these independent films, like, you know, say, films in Baltimore, films in Chicago, another thing that independent filmmakers do is basically they'll draw the people in their local networks, people they take, you know, they took acting classes with, people they know in the same casting. It'll just be, say, a Baltimore-based project, a Chicago-based project. And once it goes in the post and once the movie's released, you know, only people in that general area know about it. So what I particularly did was I said, okay, I'm going to get some popular people in the UK. I'm going to get some popular people in Chicago. I'm going to get some popular people in Maryland. I'm going to get some popular people in L.A., and we're going to bring them all here to Massachusetts because when the movie's completed, we already hit those major markets, and boom, it's doing the same. It's kind of like I probably shouldn't use this because we're kind of looked at as the evil empire. It's kind of what's known as the New England Patriot way. If you look at their first, Super Bowl before Tom Brady was a star, it was a bunch of veteran players who were experienced who wanted to win. No, they did not have a Marshall Faulk. No, they did not have a Jerry Rice. But they had a Teddy Bruschi, who was a virtual unknown at the time. They had a Roman Pfeiffer who made a lot of tackles. And basically, when you have a bunch of experienced people who are hungry and want to win and who believe in each other, you're going to have something great. And I learned down the Army as well. So if you have it's all teamwork. You know, I remember at Northeastern in one of the locker rooms, there was an acronym for team, and it sticks with me throughout my entire life. Together, everyone achieves more, and that's pretty much what we're looking for with this production. We're pretty much looking for a team that's going to be solid. And I've also looked, when I did the casting, people who worked with each other before. One reason why the Hangover was so successful, Bradley Cooper was a no-name at the time. The director of that film deliberately cast people who've all worked with one another. That's the same with this film. Suzy Lorraine is going to be on her third film with Dan Brownlee in this. Ashley Lawrence is going to be on her second film with Dan Brownlee. Kaylee Williams and Anthony Del Negro, who is a distant cousin of mine, are going to be on their second film together. So there's going to be all this Kim, and then also Victoria Broom, who's also worked with Dan Brownlee, who's going to play that female heroine I told you about. She's also worked with Dan Brownlee, and they're very good friends. Those are all, like I said, that's the London group. Then you have the Chicago group. Then you have the L.A. group. And everyone's coming here for those tax incentives. We're going to make this movie, and then we're going to put it on the festival circuit. We're going to hopefully win some awards and distribution, and then we'll see what happens. Maybe 10 years from now we'll be talking about how it just blew up even more. But right now we're just going to make a movie. We're going to have fun, and we're going to take it from there.
That's real talk. Okay, Keith, I'm going to give you the last question. You got another question?
You mentioned that you're going to use Indiegogo to crowdfund part of the movie.
Not necessarily crowd. Let me go ahead. Finish your question. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, but I just want to know: is there like pluses or minuses? I mean, do you think crowdfunding it would take away from the creative process? I guess that's my question.
Well, no. Basically, when you collaborate with like-minded individuals, and we're all like-minded. That was one of the first things that I looked for when I was bringing on collaborators. In terms of the crowdfunding, the Indiegogo, we're not 100%. We're not dependent on that crowdfunding. Basically, that, as I was saying earlier on in the interview, that's basically to basically develop a pre-sale to kind of get the hype of, like, for instance, before, a major film comes out, you can buy a poster, you can do a pre-download. Like, for instance, when Grand Theft Auto, the video game, came out, you could buy that on pre-order, like, 4 months ahead of time. So what we're basically going to be doing with the Indiegogo thing is it's not necessarily raising the funds to actually pay for the movie. It's actually to start the hype. So people will be waiting, and they're basically buying a digital download available, say, 3 to 4 months before the film's actually released. So instead of paying $20 for a DVD at Walmart, they can go and buy our digital download for $15 on Indiegogo. And not only that, another reason why I'm doing it, the primary reason is it's for the One Fun Boston. I've been seeing how much money has been getting raised, et cetera, and I want to give back to that. So in terms of the crowdfunding, it's to basically start the hype, build more of a cash flow, and on the same time help the victims of the town I love. And in terms of the creativeness, I don't see how someone who's going to buy a DVD or a picture can change the script. I mean, if they want to message us on the Facebook fan page and give a suggestion, they can, but, you know, you'd have to put a lot of money into to change the creative process. So, you know, if someone wants to come and give us X amount of dollars, which, you know, would, you know, blow, like, say, for instance, Quentin Tarantino, his first film, Reservoir Dogs, it was supposed to be $30,000 on private funds. Then he met Harvey Keitel, and his friends gave him an additional $1 million. If someone was going to throw money at us like that, yeah, I probably would change the creative process. But in terms of where we are now, we're happy where we are now. We're gonna go with what we have. You know, just like I said, the New England Patriot way. We're gonna win with what we have.
Okay.
Well, that's a good answer. Well, Mark, you've been an excellent guest. I just thank you so much for coming on the show. I mean, it's just very, very thoughtful answers. I can tell you're very committed. You got a lot of good ideas. You're a very creative guy. I mean, you got a whole system in place, man. I'm really impressed by you.
Well, thank you very much, William, and you've been a very good host.
Yes, and Keith, I just thank you too for coming on the show. I'm looking forward to your next game show appearance.
Okay, it might be this fall, so we don't know.
Which show?
It's a new show. It's called Million Second Quiz Show, I think.
Uh-huh.
They're casting now, so.
Okay, absolutely. So when you go on a win, we'll have you on
that.
Again, okay? Win,
yeah.
Win, lose, draw,
okay.
We'll have you on again. What's that?
Okay.
Okay. All right,
okay.
Keith. All right, Mark. Well, thanks again, and you guys have a great night.
Yeah, thank you
okay,
for having
good night.
Me.
Okay, all right, good night.
Good night.
And let me leave you with this quote from Harper Lee, who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird. The book to read is not the one that thinks for you, but the one that makes you think. Good night.
Yes,
and just before she drank it.